Welcome to another week, and since the beginning of last week, Flames have made a number of little tweaks, kind of little tinkering moves around the edges of their NHL roster, but I really don't mind the way things are starting to shape up for this team. So since last Monday, Flames have signed Joachim Nordstrom, Dominic Simone, Nikita Nesterov, and then on Saturday we find out they've signed Josh Levo to a contract. So all one-year deals, all at NHL minimum, except for Levo, who comes in at $875,000. And the more I've thought about it, the more I really like Calgary's depth right now, and the more I like the way that it shapes up and compares to what we saw from them last year. So just for sake of argument, the fourth line during the restart, so the fourth line during the Winnipeg series and the Dallas series was kind of a combination of any three of these four guys: Derek Ryan, Mark Jankowski, Tobias Reeder, and Zach Rinaldo. Now we're talking about fourth line options. Like, of course, Ryan still remains, but you add in Nordstrom, you add in Levo, you add in Dominic Simone, and I think that you've got a guy in Levo who could maybe slot in a little higher up the lineup for the Calgary Flames and doesn't necessarily need to be penciled in as a fourth line guy. I think that's a better group, a deeper group. I think the fourth line, the bottom six, is better now than it was to end the season. And on the back, the regular blue line, when healthy last year, was Giordano Brody, Hanifin Hamonic, Gustafson Anderson, and then Forbort as the extra. Now it's Giordano Anderson, Hanifin Tanev, Valimaki Nesterov, and, you know, maybe we'll throw in Shillington as the number seven guy as it stands right now. Maybe the blue line not quite as deep, but not as huge a drop-off as maybe we were talking about a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks before. They got their goaltender. They're much better at that position. Well, I'm actually liking the way the depth on this team shapes up. Where are you on how all these signings start to fit in around the edges of the Calgary Flames?
Yeah, we were curious about the cap space and the fact that there was not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of room to wiggle or to go big game hunting necessarily, but I think they've done a nice job, given their cap situation, of filling the gaps. You know, I got a bigger picture problem we can get to maybe a little bit later on in this segment, but Pete, overall, I think that the fact that, you know, it was only a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, okay, I don't know how this team's going to fill out the rest of the roster, because Cap Friendly is showing 9 forwards on the NHL roster and about, you know, less than $5 million in cap space. So I think, given the situation, it would be very, very unfair for us to sit here and criticize the way that they've been able to fill out their depth. We talked about it. You're filling the holes with NHL players as opposed to players you're hoping are NHL regulars. So all that being said, I do tip my hat, but as I mentioned, I've got a bigger problem with the Flames roster. But Pete, I guess just your thoughts on how they've been able to kind of fill in the depth here, given their situation.
Yeah, I like what they've done, especially at forward. I had talked about how I thought the bottom six was improved before the Levo signing, and so now this adds to it a little bit more. I like what they've done. I still am a little concerned about the depth on the blue line, just given Tanev's injury history. Now, I don't know if it's entirely fair to compare it to where they finished last year in terms of depth. Because
no, and that's why why I didn't. That's why I said when everybody was healthy last year.
Right. Yeah, because there was a lot going into that last year. And, I mean, you go out, you add a couple of guys that are clearly rentals and trade and stuff like that. So it is tough to compare. But I still would like a little bit more depth on that blue line if they could. But overall, like Will said, Pat, given the circumstances, I think that they have done a really, really good job. And you can find a few different combinations in that bottom six that kind of excite you a little bit. So especially at forward, I like what the Flames have done with the bottom six so far this year.
Yeah, I think that they are. I think that they're actually better in terms of their depth at forward. I think that especially with Levo being able to slot in and potentially play on a third line or potentially be able to play in kind of an offensive role. He's a really nice middle six finisher for the career. You take a look at the underlying numbers. You take a look at the scoring rate. rates at 5-on-5. That's a really effective player the Flames have just signed for less than $900,000 on a one-year deal. I don't think he needs to be penciled in on the fourth line, and so you can start to tinker with things. Maybe Milan Lucic is a fourth-line player next year. Maybe they're not 100% tied to Bennett, Lucic, and Dubé. Just because they worked well for 7 or 8 games in the playoffs doesn't mean they have to be penciled in as the opening day line for next season. You've got a lot of different options at forward. And I think to your point, Klein, they are a little less deep on the blue line for sure. The 1-7, I don't think is a significant drop off from where they were last year. But if all of a sudden Valimaki or Tanev, to your point, get hurt, then maybe that's when you start to become a little more worried, because it felt like they had a little bit more in the holster had they run into injuries last season.
Yeah, there's a few other guys you could plug in and you'd feel a little bit better about. I will say the one part of this blue line that I think is an upgrade is I think there's a bit more upside with this group. Like, best case scenario for this blue line might be better than best case scenario in a couple other spots. Like, if Valimaki turns into what we think Valimaki can turn into, this blue line's going to be really good. And if Tanev can stay healthy for close to a full season, then I'm really liking how this blue line can take shape. But Pat, there are a few concerns, but I think the high end is actually pretty high for this blue line.
What do you think of the Levo signing as kind of in a bubble, Mr. Nolte?
Yeah, I like it quite a bit. I think this is a guy, when he came to Vancouver first in that trade with Toronto, I remember he kind of popped right away, and you could see some of the offensive ceiling maybe this guy has. Not saying he's going to get back to that point, but, you know, to your point when you opened the show about the depth and the fact that maybe this is going to allow the team to play Lucic in a more limited role, more of a fourth line type role, I think Levo's a guy who could play inside your top 9 and probably play in your top 6 in a pinch, but a really good depth signing for the Flames, and I love the way that he can contribute both physically and offensively. Again, he's not going to be a guy who puts up 25, 30 goals, Pete, but he's a guy that I think is something the Flames don't have a lot of right now in that bottom 6. And like I say, if you do run into some of the injury issues you guys just talked about, he is a guy who I think can slide anywhere in that top 9. And yes, you don't want him playing in your top 6 for 3 months, but I do think he can do it in a pinch. And again, I don't think Calgary has enough of those guys in their lineup that can go kind of anywhere lines 1-4.
Mm-hmm. No, and he certainly provides that. And Lou was talking about it in Hockey Central at noon. He's one of those guys where he has been fine so far, but it still feels like there's another gear that he can get to. And maybe with a bit more consistent playing time or a more consistent role, that might be something he finds in Calgary. Like Will said, I don't think this is, okay, Gaudreau, Monahan, and Levo, night one, let's roll with it, baby. But I think that he can play up the lineup for the Flames, and I like a lot of his game. I'm a big fan of this signing from a Flames perspective, Pat.
Like, I mean, what is the offensive upside? A guy with 65 points in 170 NHL games? I don't know. Like, are we talking about a 50-point guy? Probably not. Are we talking about a guy who could be in the 10 goals, 20 assists range? Yeah, that
seems... I
was going
to say 30, 35 points. Yeah, probably seems realistic. Yeah,
that seems reasonable, especially if he's getting consistent top 9 minutes and is able to stay healthy. Last year, he only played 36 games. He had the knee injury, so there certainly is some injury history there and a little bit of a worry about that, but when this guy's healthy, he's a pretty effective player. And we talked a lot. It's funny, you talk a little bit about the bigger picture, Will, and let's dive into that. But just, you know, we've talked a lot about the way that this team could look next year. If Monahan, Gaudreau were both here and they're going to remain attached to the hip next season, and I get my way and they move Lindholm to center, I don't know, kind of a head-to-head, nice shutdown pairing with some decent offense, Backlund and Levo, I don't mind that as a potential pairing for next season whatsoever. So I like that signing quite a bit for Calgary. I think he fits. I think Simone, I think Nordstrom fit in a little bit more as fourth-line guys. I think Levo's got a little bit more of the upside in comparison offensively. But what's the bigger picture issue you're looking at, Will?
Well, I mean, you look at, and I know that 18-19, it was absolutely everything going right for him, and that was the absolute high, and yes, the disappointment of a 5-game loss in the playoffs to the Avalanche didn't help things, but for me, Pat, I mean, we made a big deal last week about are we focusing too much on the signings of the third and fourth line and this third pairing? And are we talking too much about that? Because really, the bigger picture here, and again, for this, they've been tinkering on the outside. There has been no impact moves made with this team outside of the goaltender, and I think that can be a great equalizer, absolutely, especially when you sign a guy like Jacob Markstrom. But again, the last two playoffs, when it mattered, the last two goaltenders you've had performed just fine, and in my opinion, you can't be blaming them solely for the loss. So for me, yes, you've tinkered with the depth, you've rearranged the deck chairs, if you will, but I still think the main problem exists with this core. Now, can you get around that with the combinations you've talked about, i.e. Lindholm to center and shuffling your lines? Yeah, maybe, sure, you could do a short-term fix for that. But guys, I still sit here and say the biggest problem remains that, again, the transition from 18-19, when the team was at the top of the Western Conference, to 19-20. What did you have for changes? Hathaway was gone, Lazar was gone, and James Neal was gone in place of Milan Lucic. Again, all bit pieces when you look at the overall picture of this team. So what is so different about this offseason? Why should we be praising what's been going on when, for me, the big problem still exists, Pete?
Yeah, and this is one of those ones where, like, I am in full agreement with you. To me, the top six was, like, at the top of my checklist this year for, okay, this can't keep happening. And the way that it happens in the postseason, it's these guys specifically that seem to be the issue. Now, I do still, instead of full criticism, I'm going with more incomplete because of how different this offseason has been. But we cannot be talking about the same top six going into training camp. If we are, I think we're talking about the same results, where they have a pretty good playoff. They show us some flashes, like, hey, maybe because they went through more adversity this year that they're going to be great. And then it's the same. So at some point, you have to recognize what the problem is. The problem wasn't goaltending. The problem wasn't TJ Brody on the blue line. I do like some of the moves that they have made so far, but I need to see more. And I understand, Pat, that this is a different offseason, and it is a tricky one to make a franchise-altering decision in, because no one's doing anything on the trade market right now. But at some point, like Will said, it's kind of just shuffling around the chairs. There needs to be, I think, some kind of big move to shake this top six that's been the issue the last two playoffs.
Well, a couple things. First of all, to answer your question, Will, how can we be praising them if they haven't done that? I think what we're doing is we're praising or we're talking about these things in a little bit more of a vacuum or a little bit more separate from the bigger picture. Yes, I absolutely think that these moves make them better around the fringes, specifically at forward. They're definitely significantly better in net, which I don't think we're giving, or at times I don't think he's given enough credit for how much better I think that could make them next year. And that's my opinion, but I think that doesn't get enough credit for how much better and how much more consistent this team as a whole could be next year. And on the blue line, we've talked about the way they've kind of backfilled, and that's going to be an interesting position next year. But I think you can talk about these depth moves, these tinkering moves. I think you can talk about them and say that they're nice moves, solid signings. And also, to Klein's big phrase this year is two things can be true at the same time. And I think that's exactly what we're talking about right now. These can be good signings. And they also can still.
Not,
and I'm not saying you are, but I'm just saying you asked the question why, and here's my opinion on it. I think everything you guys have just said is true, and I also think it's true that these are good signings. And the other point is, like, we're still, the reason why I'm not overly critical is because we're still 2 months or so, if not more, until the offseason is over. So it's a weird offseason. There's still plenty of runway left in the offseason. And I think that there's still plenty of time for them to make the deal that we've all been talking about, or make the change that we've all been talking about. And Klein, you made you asked the question, or I don't know, Klein, or it might have been you, Will, who asked the question, can they come into next season with the same forward group? That's a fun one we'll tackle tomorrow. And what happens if they do, we'll tackle that one tomorrow. So Flames have made their moves, tinkering. Any, just quickly before I move on, any rebuttals on that?
Well, the only thing I was going to say is, again, last week we were talking about the fact that we're making too big of a deal out of, you know, the third line or the fourth line, sorry, and the third pairing because they play 8 to 11 minutes a night. Well, I think the same can be true here. I mean, yes, the signings are good, all the depth signings. And again, for me, I just think that, you know, essentially, and that's why I say the goaltender is the great equalizer. Yes, I think he's going to be able to hide some warts maybe. But for me, and the reason why I have trouble getting hyped up or feeling like the Flames are going to be better next season is because the team is essentially the same for 50 to 55 minutes of a 60.
And I don't know if they are better as a whole next season. You're right. These are still, when it comes, I mean, Levo, I think, is a nice addition that could give him a little bit of a boost in the top nine.
Yeah, he'll probably play more than 11 minutes. I understand that. And again, I'm not saying to, and I think we're all in agreement, you can't force a trade involving any of these big names that we've been talking about. And again, I understand the economics of it. I'm just talking about, as a whole, I have a hard time sitting here saying the Flames are better when really they've only tinkered with the bottom of the roster.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I don't think anything Will just said there is unfair, Klein, because I think that they are slightly better or better on their fourth line and maybe a slight step back overall on their blue line. But and yes, let's forget about the goaltending for a second. But in terms of that, I mean, I don't know how much of a step forward is a roster they've taken because the other stuff hasn't been touched. So we are absolutely talking about, are they deeper at forward? I believe yes. But how much... like, how much does that actually help them next season? That's a very fair point, and I think it goes back to the central topic that we've been talking about throughout this offseason.
Yeah, I think that, again, like you said, a couple things could be true. That the moves they have made, I like this roster more, especially at forward, than I did a year ago. And I do think that they're going to be a bit more difficult to match up against. And I think with that, and if the top six doesn't change, you're just going to make the other team who knocks you out in the first round have to work a little bit harder next time. Like, that's kind of, that's basically where I'm at right now, where, okay, they have made these changes. I don't know if it even means advancing past another round of the playoffs. It's just, maybe you get to a seventh this year and we continue the one game progression.
Right. Three texts before we move on to a couple of questions that I think are very much relevant to what we're talking about. This reads, I think Trees looking to trade Johnny and or Monahan, but the market isn't there. Any trade for them would be seen as a loss as it would be lesser pieces for them versus a one for one deal that makes sense. This reads, well, the big trade obviously just wasn't there. Tree has said multiple times he's not going to give away the top players for a lesser trade. He might be trying to shake up the core. We don't know. And again, that's why I say there's still plenty of time left in the offseason. And Mike writes, team is still essentially the same for 50 of the 60 minutes of a hockey game. They'll just be reliant on Markstrom to make the difference against the elite teams. Until the first line's upgraded, the same conversations will consistently resurface. Hour two of the big show is underway. Logan Gordon on the ones and twos. My name is Pat Steinberg. We've got Peter Klein in his satellite studio, Will Nault in his satellite studio, Logo and I here at the Iconic Studio downtown, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Commitment, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. So all these depth signings do beg a few questions, though. Klein, the big one for you is, where does this now leave Glenn Gauden?
Yeah, and again, this feels like a very Canadian market question to ask. Like, hey, this team is making a bunch of moves. What about this dude who's never played in the NHL before?
So ask the question. Let's go.
So, yeah, no, I don't mind it. Because we had the Gauden conversation a while ago where it was, okay, if this guy isn't making the opening night roster, then this is going to be a bit of a disappointment. And now I look at what is potentially the opening night roster, and I'm having a real tough time. I'm already having a tough time putting everyone in the lineup, and that's before I even get to Glenn Gauden. And I think we are at a point, and from an organizational standpoint, it's not a bad spot to be in. For Glenn Gauden, it probably sucks. But from an organizational standpoint, when you are getting a chance to overdevelop guys in the American Hockey League, again, that's a good thing. That's what some quality organizations can do. And Will, I'm at the point now, unless Glenn Gauden is just absolutely blowing everyone away whenever we get to training camp again, it's real tough to picture this Flames team on opening night with Glenn Gauden, which has to suck for him, but I think is probably not a bad thing from the organization standpoint.
Yeah, it's funny, kind of hypocritical of myself here, because I was just talking about how, you know, these moves don't necessarily make them a better team. in the bigger picture, but the depth is better, and that means Glenn Gauden has been shuffled down the depth chart. And I think it just goes back, Pat, to what we had talked about last week, and I think Klein was a part of those conversations too, and just the fact that they're replacing some of these players that they, again, had question marks around, like a Glenn Gauden, who we think can play in the NHL and will play in the NHL at some point here. But the Flames have now filled the gaps of these 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th forwards on their roster or in the organization with players with NHL experience. And as a result, unfortunately, as Pete just said, sucks for Glenn Gauden. But I think in the bigger picture, the competition is now deeper and more intense for sure. At camp. And I just think Glenn Godden's going to be on the outside looking in. It doesn't mean he's not going to play games for the Calgary Flames next year. But the Flames have done a nice job, as I mentioned off the top, with their cap situation to fill in some of those gaps at the bottom of their roster with NHL players, something that really hadn't been done. And I think if we were going into next season, penciling Glenn Gauden in, no disrespect to him, I think we're sitting here saying the Flames are a worse team. So I think overall, again, praise for some of the depth signings, but it does suck for Glenn Gauden.
100%, but I think, I mean, he signed his contract. He's qualified. If he's got, I don't think there is any problem if Glenn Gauden plays 10 NHL games next year and 50 AHL games. Like, there's zero problem with that. If you can make yourself better and have a guy over marinate in the American Hockey League, I don't think there's any problem with that whatsoever.
Yep. That's why I say I'm hypocritical myself because, you know, again, I think it's better for the Flames if he's in the American Hockey League for 80% of next season as opposed to trying to shoehorn him in, Pete.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that is essentially what you'd be doing. Because as of right now, you look at the cap friendly page, there's 13 forwards on there. Unless you're doing unless they just completely punt on that sixth defenseman, you can only play 12 of them. So that it's going to be a bit of an issue, even just getting all the NHL guys they have on the roster onto the roster on a night in, night out basis. Yeah, I think for Glenn Gauden, this is another opportunity to continue to grow at the American Hockey League level. I do think while it does kind of seem like he could be ready for the NHL if called upon, I don't know if the AHL is just all of a sudden, completely past that level. He can't learn anything. I think there's still some development he can do there. And if there is an injury or two, you're comfortable with him coming up. And that's the kind of organizational depth, Pat, that quality teams can have, and the Flames are making sure they build that kind of quality depth this year.
Yeah, I mean,
Pete, you just buried the lead, man. I think we should have started the show with the Flames are going to dress 13-5 next year. I don't know why we're. Come on.
I had a tough time finding that third right shot defenseman. I mean, look, if you're not evolving, you're dying, right? We saw the Raptors do some creative things with Nick Nurse with the box in one. No one's tried the 13-5. I'm just saying.
I mean, I'm sure they've done it in junior B hockey before. I don't know if you can say no one, but it's not a typical NHL look. And then just quickly, and I think you're bang on, Klein. These are problems that an NHL team wants to have. As a general manager, you're like, geez, where do I fit all these guys in who I think are NHLers as opposed to, geez, what non-NHLers are we going to put in there? You'd much rather have the former than the latter. Well, we talked a little bit about it on Friday after the Nesterov signing, and we'll wrap up on this segment. But the more and more I think about it, I know he's not signed yet. Maybe he's dealt. But the more and more I think about it, right now, I think Shillington's your 7 next year. When you ask me where Shillington fits, I say, yeah, he's probably your 7. Or as you said, maybe not your strict 7, but maybe we're talking about some sort of rotation there with Nesterov being part of it. Valimaki, I think they want to have as an everyday guy, but who knows what the injury situation is like. So where does Shillington fit? I think he is part of a third pairing rotation at best, and that's not necessarily the worst thing.
No, I think that's exactly where he fits in next season, and I would expect him, as I said last week, probably sign for a 1 year anywhere from $750,000 to $800,000. Maybe it's for league minimum. I couldn't tell you, but I think he's probably right in that vein there. And again, I don't know if you're for me, and I know that we all differ on maybe what the progression or what's left.
The only thing
that
we differ at is maybe what the ceiling is or
yeah, maybe how much is kind of left in terms of a development runway. But I think absolutely this guy is fine in the NHL. And Pete, again, if he's your number seven and he's not, you know, going to limit himself to 12 games next year, I don't think you're really hurting the players. So it's a role that he played for the second half of last season anyways. I think, yeah, absolutely. You come in next year with Shillington as your number seven, and it's a good way to, if Valimaki needs a rest on a back-to-back or something happens, it's a nice way to kind of just get Shillington some playing time and get Valimaki some rest. Maybe it's Tanev, whatever. But I think he's a guy that can plug in whenever, and it's not going to be necessarily your typical number seven. But again, I don't know if you're really hurting his development by keeping him in the NHL as your number seven next season.
Yeah, like I think best case scenario is he gets a consistent role of playing so that he can work on some of the things in the defensive zone. But the only way he's doing that is the American Hockey League. We've discussed that waivers are a thing for him now. I don't know if he's making it all the way to Stockton without another team claiming him. So from a Flames perspective, this is probably best case scenario with him and Nesterov cycling in and out and maybe giving Valimaki a bit of a break. That's probably the best way to handle this scenario right now. And again, if something happens, you have someone that you are confident in to come in for at least a limited role to whoever they're filling in for.